Alright, we just got back. So, we were discussing predictive programming and call to arms in film. Do you want to continue with that?
Well, I don't know about that, because it's more like a predictable programming, you know? You ever feel like you know the plot of a movie before it actually goes its full course? I've actually gotten that way now, because it's like every single film, the bad guy is either the leader of the good guys or is the people who the good guys are working with in order to get the bad guys, when they're actually working with the bad guy in order to help the bad guy's aims. Right? Every single plot is like that. Every single one. And people think, that must be fiction, you know, because the bad guys don't masquerade as good guys in the real world. No. That just doesn't happen, bro. That's so naive. My God. It's like, it's like you're 6 years old, you know, you haven't experienced anything in the world yet, and apparently everything's really new to you. So it's unfortunate, but there you go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it usually works that way. There are some films that actually surprise you, but not very many.
Yeah. I mean, there's not really that much creativity left in Hollywood, really, is there?
No.
I mean, they made Rocky VI, and various other things that are just basically endless sequels. I can't... And ultimately, what's really interesting is that films have... I think maybe it's the only medium by which I actually keep up with in terms of the mainstream society. I don't keep up with television shows. I don't keep up with mainstream news or politics. I don't keep up with music in the music industry. I don't keep up with fashion. I don't keep up with cars. I don't keep up with anything that normal, that quote unquote normal people who aren't aware that there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery trying to take over the planet. I'm not into anything that they're into. And in so doing, this means that it's actually very, very difficult for me to get on with people. Unless they actually care about humanity and are aware of the dangers that beset it. It's ultimately like I've almost phased myself out of this society to a large degree, with the exception of films. You get me talking about films with somebody? Boy, oh boy, am I going to be able to tell you a hell of a lot of stuff about them. You get me going about conspiracy? Boom!
Vinny, one of these days we're going to have to do a movie show, because I'm a movie fanatic as well.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because guys like us just love to sit around and absorb stuff, but have a longer attention span than a 5-minute YouTube video that just doesn't cut it.
Yeah, I love sitting down for films. I just watched Gone Girl last weekend.
Oh, yeah? What was that about? About a girl with gonorrhea?
No, about...
Or was it about a girl that gone to Korea?
No, it was about a supposed sociopath who may have killed his wife.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's a murder mystery / thriller.
Yeah.
Man, that's a mind bender.
Mm. The other mind bender I saw the other day was The Zero Theorem. You heard of that?
Yeah, that was...
The movie was just basically messed up, right? Like, the corporation that the guy works for, its logo is an all-seeing eye, and the place where he lives and does all his work has a Masonic floor. And the guy who owns the corporation that he works for, at the very end of it, tells him about order out of chaos. You know, it's just, come on, it's was pretty obvious.
Was that a New World Order-sponsored film?
Well, I mean, name me one that isn't. I mean, I've got screenshots here. Where's my screenshots folder? I want to make a doco soon, Dylan, called 33, the movie. And it's going to be simply about documenting the amount of Masonic symbolism that's actually inside movies. And here we go. This is my movie folder. I currently got 257 screenshots.
Wow.
Of Masonic floors, checkers, and all-seeing eyes, and pyramids in movies, and things like that. And the reason I'm doing this is because I did a documentary. I did a interview with Freder X and James Wright, who are two fairly high level Freemasons in their own right, who have come out against the Brotherhood and their manipulation of things. And one of the documents that they managed to unearth was one that was written a long time ago. I think it might have been towards the start of the 50s or the end of the 50s, I think. And they were talking explicitly about how they were going to insert Freemasonic imagery and the imagery of ancient Egypt and the concepts of it as well into music and television and film and popular culture in general, because they believed, and I think they are actually right, that subliminal imagery and messaging of that notion is actually so powerful that it can literally shape and sculpt society's actions. Just by putting a little pyramid or an all-seeing eye or a little black and white tiled Masonic floor in a film doesn't sound like a whole lot, does it? But what if it's in, like, so many of them that nearly every mainstream film I watch now, I have to pause it every occasion, just screenshot and then continue on with the movie, you know, almost every single one of them. It doesn't matter. They're all there. And there was an experiment.
A lot of it's propaganda.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the mechanism of how exactly they're getting this into it, right? Like, why is it that films from the 70s all the way through to today, from every single major movie studio that you can think of, is loaded with Masonic symbolism invariably in every single film, right? How can that can't happen by accident, and it's been admitted, and we've found the document that said that they were planning to do it. So I would suggest that they've done it. Who did it, though? How exactly have they got somebody in every single movie studio or producer, or is it the director, or who is it that's actually authorizing the symbolism? I mean, is it just some set decorator who just goes to the director and goes, hey, bro, you know, make this scene really awesome? And you go, what? A giant pyramid with an all-seeing eye, and the director goes, yeah, bro, why not? You know, it has absolutely nothing to do with the storyline or anything else, so let's just put it in there anyway. Does the director ask what it means? No, he doesn't. Of course he doesn't. You know, he had no idea what he's shooting. He has no idea what he's doing because he's only the director. So,
yeah, some people are willfully ignorant. Some people are just ignorant.
Yeah, yeah. Ignorance is kind of like, somebody said ignorance is a choice.
Not always.
Yeah, I agree. Not always, man. Sometimes ignorance ain't your fault. Like, let's say, for example, back in the day when slavery was legal in the United States, and then after the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, it got re-legalized in a different form. But before then, if you were a slave on a plantation and your slave master banned reading and writing, is it your fault that you're illiterate? No. I mean, you get wrapped on the knuckles and whipped several times if you were even caught so much as saying your ABCs, isn't it? So you can't blame society for being freaking stupid and following along with scumbags telling them what to do, because they've been bred and taught from a very young age to have this as their only option for life. You can only live in ignorance. You can only live in ignoring reality. You can only live in being a douchebag. All right? You can't blame people for being a douchebag if it's all they know.
Yeah. I gotta agree with you again, man.
And I've had people argue with me on this and say, no, it's everybody's responsibility. It's every, you know, libertarians, basically, who are just like people in their own personal power who have lost their empathy for other people who haven't discovered it yet, you know.
Libertarians are right on a lot of issues, but the empathy is something that a lot of them lack.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Well, I always found it very ironic that communists say that they're really out to help people and they actually want to exterminate and enslave them at the end of the day with their politics. And libertarians are out to protect people's freedoms by telling people that they don't have any and refusing to fight adequately for them. You know, it's kind of like a false paradigm. It's like libertarianism and authoritarianism, just like the left and right paradigm, have also now become false. And
you can easily compare communism to libertarianism because they both exist in fantasy worlds where either everyone's communist or everyone's libertarian, or it doesn't work.
You know, actually, that's quite a fine point that you've put there, is libertarianism something that's going to turn into draconian fascism, right?
It all leads down the pipe.
Now, see, I've been wondering, what if you combine the two? Like, if you've got these two spectrums going in completely opposite directions, and they've actually had the waters muddied so much that neither real libertarianism or real socialism even exists anymore, what if you did libertarian socialism? Hey, everybody.
That would be interesting.
Hey, everybody, you've got all these rights and freedoms and what have you that are inalienable and nobody can take them off of you, and you've got all this taxation, which is now voluntary, right?
That would be extremely interesting.
See, and I'd get criticized for saying this and get called some kind of communist sympathizer or terrorist or something like that. When the fact of the matter is, I got no problem with socialism and I got no problem with capitalism. The thing that I have a problem with is authoritarianism. Somebody telling me what to do. Someone telling me to be a socialist, telling me to be a capitalist.
Corporatism.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we get caught up in labels, ultimately.
Yeah, we do. It's something we can't really... It's something that's just so subconscious.
Well, I think that's why people get offended when you question their ideals, you know? I mean, I had somebody tell me the other day that this country would be so much worse if I was in charge of it. And I go, whoa, hold on. Worse than having zero rights and having forcible 60% taxation and worse than participating in illegal foreign wars and creating more debt than God could create by himself. It'd be worse than that, would it? I was in charge. and I don't even want to be in charge. All right. Reject having responsibility over other people. Okay. I think everybody should have their own ability to be responsible, and nobody can be forced into it because it kind of voids the whole personal responsibility if they don't personally come up with ways to be freaking responsible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It all comes down to personal will.
Yeah. And the thing is, influence in your life can be a great thing. If I remember back, I'm thinking nearly 10 years ago now, I was going to university, and a friend of mine introduced me to three things while I was down there, and that was cannabis and the comedian Bill Hicks, a documentary called The Truth and Lies in 9/11 by Michael C. Ropert from thewilderness.com. So this one person introduced me into conspiracy and comedy and weed. And he'd had no idea, and neither did I at the time, how strong an influence this would be upon me. I mean, the weed was a strong influence on me because I got busted with it, right? I'd been selling weed, as a lot of kids do in university, for like 8 months or so, and nobody'd come to me saying that they were sick. Nobody'd come to me saying that they'd been depressed by it. Nobody came to me saying that there were any consequences whatsoever from smoking that weed. So naturally, when I got arrested and had all of my stuff confiscated, all of my cash, all of my possessions, and put in handcuffs and thrown in the cells, and charged with cannabis that I didn't even have, and even though I had a full confession, they still made up evidence, and I was lucky that I didn't go to jail for a very first offense ever, first time I'd ever been arrested by a cop. I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years. for something that has never killed a single person in 10,000 years of recorded use. Now, what caused more harm, the cannabis or the law? The law. And it's been that way ever since. And had I not had that big shock in my life, I may not have had the impetus to actually change it, because I was previously an establishment lover. I thought the police were honest. I thought that politicians did what they say they were going to do and voted for them as per usual. I thought that there was nothing really that wrong, you know? I just thought that the reason I was getting harassed by my fellow students and in high school for a good portion of my life was just that, oh, people just didn't get me. And it wasn't that. I mean, it was that, but actually it was mostly more the fact that I didn't fit in. I wasn't a willing, compliant, mindless, pathetic, scum, slave piece of trash, right? And that's why all of my class colleagues didn't like me. That's why they abused me, because I was somebody who might have saved them. And they would have hated me for it. And that's a real problem in this modern society. We hate the people who help us more than the people who try to kill and destroy us. And I think it's necessary, to be honest. Because if you're really, really good and you're trying to help people and nobody questions you, sooner or later, down the track, you will become the very evil that you originally fought against, because people trust you, and they trust you implicitly. They trust you enough to never check up on what you're doing. And I like to openly tell people to be suspicious of me. I like to tell people that I'm not credible, because in the advent that I do turn into some form of douchebag, I would want people to expose me for it as quickly as possible and diminish my audience and basically prevent me from being able to do any further damage through people's falsely held trust in me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we should all do.
That's a good way to look at it. You have to have that attitude, or you're really just another one of the guys trying to make a buck off of it. You need to have the courage to ask to be exposed if you ever get to that point.
And it's also about friends as well, you know, because I've got so many contacts now in the global truth community that I consider my friends and colleagues. And if you want to prevent yourself from becoming corrupt, I think they're probably the best friends to have, is people who expose corruption for a living, don't you?
Yeah. Vinny, are you available to chat for a few after the show?
I've got about 35 minutes before my next broadcast starts.
Okay. Tomorrow, are you available at all? Because I did want to talk to you about something off air, if you're all right with that.
Tomorrow's probably going to be not good for me. I need to really take tomorrow off to recuperate, because I've had to work this whole weekend, and if I don't have a day to recuperate, I burn out. But the day after might be an idea.
All right.
Yeah, we can schedule that later on. But I think what we were talking about here was about kind of like when we were talking about the films, about the call to action. Sometimes, like, there's a film that I haven't watched in a long time, and it's in my DVD wallet, and I'm still purposely not watching it for a moment when I need it. Fight Club.
I've never seen it.
You probably shouldn't watch it if you're a bit, yeah, it's pretty rough in terms of a film. But have you seen V for Vendetta?
Of course.
Seen The Matrix?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, Fight Club came out the same year as The Matrix, and it's kind of like, it was about as inspiring for a truther to watch as The Matrix would be. Let me put it like that. It's about a dude who's like got so many freaking problems in his life because he can't sleep. And so he creates a false persona and actually starts running with it. This false persona looks how he wants to look and does everything the way he wants to do it. And we all have that persona within us somewhere, but we don't have the courage to just run with it and allow it to take over. Who are you meant to be? What are you supposed to be doing? Are you happy? If you ain't happy, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Are you still working a job that somebody else gets to tell you what to do? Does that make you happy? Are you fulfilling your creative potential? You know, these are the questions that I ask all the time, just to myself, principally, because I can't go out there and tell anybody how to live their life, and I wouldn't dream of doing so. I can only encourage them to start looking for themselves, because nobody can tell you how to live your life and have you be satisfied with it. You can try and discover how you want to live your life. Maybe you'll discover it, maybe you won't, but you shouldn't refuse to try, because then you will definitely not find it. You will definitely not find what you're looking for.
Yeah, you definitely shouldn't cheat yourself with the opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, how long are you going to be on this planet, give or take? You know, are you going to be here infinitely? No? Then stop wasting your frickin' limited time, son. All right? I mean, it's like, how much more are you, I don't know. My wife has been downloading shows off the internet kind of thing, because obviously we don't have TV and we don't really like watching the ads. And it's been blessed. But she sort of like, when you run out of good shows to watch and you're kind of like, oh, I wonder what this one is. And these American sitcoms that are so lame and so cheesy and the jokes are just not funny and the audience still laughs, like with that canned laughter and all of that kind of stuff. And it's almost like you're sitting there going, how can anybody actually find this in any way amusing? It's just not funny anymore. And I think once people cotton on to the fact that this plan for your life that other people have made for you, you know, your parents send you to this school, that or the other, if they weren't really on your side in the meantime, if they weren't trying to send you to something that would actually help you grow and develop and not be dependent on others to tell you how to live your life, then you're never going to find out how to live it. I mean, for me, it was just simply, I'd never fit in anyway. So basically being on the outskirts as I am and having people in the mainstream media look down on me, even though I'm taller than them and better at them at what I do than they are, I think it's actually kind of natural, as if my entire life of it has actually prepared me for a career of being in the limelight and having to deal with a constant flow of moronic, pathetic, weak people who attack me and abuse me and try to discourage me. I've lived a life full of that, and my career is full of that, and I don't listen to them because I know that they're full of it. You know what I'm saying? Somebody who doesn't know how to live their life comes and tells you how to live yours. You know? You ever had an obese person try to teach you how to be, I don't know, an aerobics instructor or something like that? You ever had somebody who's got a beard that's down to their knees try to sell you a razor? You know? Dude, you obviously don't know how to use one. And that's the thing. People are taking advice from people who have no knowledge, no experience. And they don't double check to see whether or not these people are actually full of crap in the first place.
Yeah. That's what happens. That's why the mainstream media deception has been going on for so long.
Yeah. It's questioning, you know. It's ironic because that's what a journalist is supposed to do, isn't it, Dylan?
Yeah. Journalists are supposed to be the watchdogs. Yeah. We've gotten to a point where the watchdogs have become...
They've been muted.
You know, they've become the fox in the hen house.
Yeah. Well, the fox basically built the hen house, bro. It's like, hey.
Yeah.
You know, like two foxes are sitting there. One goes to the other. Hey, bro. He's like, what? Are you hungry? And he's like, yeah, man, I'm really hungry. Well, you know how we're hungry all the time, right? It's like, yeah. Well, what if we, instead of, you know, going into somebody else's hen house and maybe getting caught or hurt or getting attacked by a dog or something, what if we actually just built a hen house, got our own chickens, and just live with them alongside them so that the chickens will get used to us being in there and actually expect that one day they'll be killed and not even try to stop us? Hey, bro, that's a brilliant idea. Where'd you come up with that? And he goes, oh, I read a Henry Kissinger book once, bro.
You read his new one?
I don't read, and that's the thing. I talk to authors, but I don't read their books. I'm bloody terrible. I mean,
I've never
I can read, but it's not that I... but I just... Yeah, I haven't read much since leaving university, actually. It really put me off reading in general, because when you read a novel or when you read a book, like when I was 11, for example, I read Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. I think it was like a 400-page book, and I read that on a school day, the whole book.
Yeah, I read one of the Game of Thrones books, which is a 1,300-page book, and two school days. So we read about the same pace, it seems.
Or at least we did. Because I haven't read very much since leaving university in 2005, 2006, because all the things that you were required to read in these educational institutions are full of wank, all right? Just W-A-N-K. There's nothing more but spoof on a page. It's terrible. It's just so convoluted. It makes no sense. There's no proper sentence structure. They're not capable of explaining concepts so that you're capable of understanding them. And that's the idea, to think that rambling nonsense for page after page and not making a point and not enlightening you is the height of intellectual capacity. And that's why I quit university. That I realized that it wasn't the place for me. I was somebody who could still think before going to university. Yeah, and I knew that if I stayed, I no longer would be.
It's really just a place where they teach you how to regurgitate information.
It's like mind control.
It's how my school has been.
Yeah. I just don't understand why people can put up with it, because I can't put up with it. And I think that's actually one of my problems and the reason why I don't get along so well with many people is because I'm not prepared to accept people who don't know what they're talking about, who aren't interested in exploring the possibilities of this world, who cannot admit when they're wrong, and are generally uncurious. I mean, what is the point in associating with people like that? What do you even hope to gain? And the answer is you can't really gain anything from relationships with your inferiors. And that's why all of the people that I associate with, including you, Dylan, are people that have accomplished something that I know that I either haven't yet or can't. I mean, with your disabilities and things going through this process at such a young age, you're literally like a decade, maybe two, ahead of my development as a person. And that's why I continue to associate with you, because you're better than me in some way. Okay? And that's the only way I've found throughout life to actually improve the person that you are, is to almost exclusively associate with people who can show you how to do it, if only you would listen.
Yeah, that's a good way to live. You have to be able to learn something from everyone. Has something you can learn. It's just, is it useful?
And most of the time, unfortunately, it's like, I recall, you know, speaking of university, said, and we, you know, we were talking about libertarianism before, and these two libertarians, you know, arguing, and they're just like young, they're probably about maybe, I don't know, five years younger than me at the time, and they were talking about politics and such like that. And you know how you can kind of hear a snippet of a conversation and you hear something so stupid that you just know that these two people are basically retarded, all right? And they just, and they're at university and they think they're smart, you know? That's our problem in this society, isn't it? The most,
you know, that everyone thinks they're smart.
Yeah. I mean, well, in specificity, those who are the most stupid and the least capable of actual independent thought are those who think they are the most intelligent and most capable of independent thought when they haven't actually had an independent thought in their frickin' life. And so I insert myself into this conversation and I ask them what they're talking about, and after about 15 seconds or so, they actually just walk away from me. Literally. Like, that's how forcible their own protection of their ignorance bubble is. It's like, oh my god, this guy's like a big sharp needle, and I'm just a weak bubble of ignorance. I don't want him to pop me. Let's walk away. You know, that reminds me. I thought about pretending to be a slave. You know, like a willing, loving, ignorant slave, and kind of like I don't know what I'd dress in, but just kind of want to like go up to John Key with a megaphone and, you know, prostrate at his feet, you know, like get down on my knees and my hands on the ground in front of him. Oh, master, I am a woman. I love you. Please give me your attention, master. I need it. I cannot survive without your light. I have the desire. I need the desires of your filth and disgust. Oh, master, please don't forsake me. I can just imagine everybody, like, you should be cracking up laughing. You know, you got to go do this to everybody, like Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Oh, Biden, master, please give me your light. I want to serve you.
you're really a character.
I mean, ultimately, I think the best people in life are their own character, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's great.
It's kind of like The Big Lebowski. You know what's really great about the movie The Big Lebowski is they got really, really good characters. And they're actually characters, like the kind of character that you would meet in real life and you think, man, that guy's a character. And they're probably based off real people that these people have seen in real life or something like that. And then they just fictionalize them a little bit so that people can't even believe that such a person exists. Yeah.
Ultimately, that might be better for the world in some ways.
Yeah. I just think, you know, we need to embrace the madness a little bit. Absolutely. Because it's kind of like I don't know how to describe it. Madness is sort of like a river, and you can either plant yourself right in the middle of it as a big immovable stone,
Or you can go against the current and get swept up.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you're going to get swept away eventually, but sometimes it's better to just go with the flow. You know? What's the worst thing that can happen? And the worst thing that can possibly happen if you try to kind of go with the flow in terms of the modern servitude and insanity is that you become permanently insane because of it. I mean, I don't understand. I do understand, but I wish that people who know the truth about how bad TV is for them would just stop watching TV and see how their life changes, kind of thing. I was just on a show just before coming on here, Dylan, with Brad and Thunder from the Thunder and Light team. They make holographic devices that can affect room temperatures and things like that. It's pretty advanced stuff. And it was quite interesting that when you try to come up with an invention that people think is totally advanced, out of this world, advanced technology, etc., that actually helps people, unlike the FDA and the AMA, who are basically America's leading cause of death. They get called quacks and crazy people and things like that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, some of that is by design.
Yeah. And I believe that we can change this. You know, we can change the whole system all the way around by simply exposing scumbaggery wherever it may see. You know, like a big brother campaign, see scumbaggery, expose scumbaggery. You know, if somebody's a liar, if somebody's a psychopath, if somebody's a pedophile, if somebody's a murderer, if somebody's a war criminal, if somebody's a corrupt CEO, if somebody is taking payoffs from lobbyists and they're trying to represent their constituents in Congress or in the Senate or even in the executive branch, if they're taking payoffs, that's scumbaggery and it needs to be exposed. And I think as once humanity in general, once enough people, maybe even only 3 to 5% of the population expose every bit of scumbaggery they see on a daily basis, nobody will be able to get away with anything anymore. And you'll actually then be able to have fertile soil with which to plant the seeds of our new, fair, scumbaggery-free society.
And that'll probably last for about 50 to 100 years, and the cycle may end up starting again.
Yeah. And which is why, in order to perpetuate it for as long as possible, but also to allow for growth and change within the society, you need to be teaching people, much like Hugo Chavez did, what their rights are, why they have those rights, and also my concept of it is follow what the Founding Fathers said, you know, that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And for the last 100 years, there has not been enough vigilance.
Yeah, we've been completely slacking off.
Exactly. Now, I think that if you could drum it into people, if we could use those mind control techniques of repetition constantly in people's face all the time, expose scumbaggery, don't put up with corruption, don't allow psychopaths to hurt the people you love, don't allow people with no conscience to have control of your nation, don't allow them to have control of resources. If people are corrupt and they have power, then they can do damage. If people are corrupt, in general, the worst they could do is probably snatch a lady's handbag or maybe murder her in order to get her handbag, as opposed to drum up $14 trillion worth of debt in 8 years or murder millions of people in an illegal war. Okay?
We've had a lot of those.
Yeah. And it's happening all the time, and this is because to expose a scumbag actually also exposes yourself at the same time. This is what I learned with my conflict with Pete Santilli when he stole the Guerrilla Media Network name off of me, is that because I exposed him, he made me and people I loved a target. And it's very, very difficult for those with conscience to go up against those who do not, because those people with conscience have rules that they will not break. I won't kill children. I won't lie about people. I won't initiate force. I won't do any of these things. And that gives psychopaths an evolutionary advantage over the rest of us, because morality is something that
I forget where the quote came from, but basically it said to defeat a monster, you have to become one.
Denzel Washington in Training Day. To protect the sheep, you got to catch the wolf, and it takes a wolf to catch a wolf. Now, I'm a narcissist, right? And all psychopaths are narcissists. But not every narcissist is a psychopath. And part of the reason why I dislike psychopaths so much is because I see so much of my own behavior coming out of their mouths, being exuded through their existence. And it's kind of like a slap in the face to me, because those things that I had to work really hard on to get over, I used to steal from people, I used to lie, I used to be cruel and callous and hurt people's feelings on purpose, just for fun, because I was hurting inside. And I think it took me getting this career going to actually teach me that who I was wasn't who I had to be, that I actually had a choice. I can use my personality flaws as a means of understanding my enemy better than others, and in so doing, make me better at resisting them and better at predicting their behavior and opposing it than other people. But I can't use their tactics because I know that I'm corruptible, and I can slip into that kind of state of who I used to be if I'm not careful. If you stick your head into hell and you start staring at it, sometimes it stares back. And I do see a lot of people in this movement who don't acknowledge these weaknesses in themselves. And in so doing, they allow, just like corruption, if you're not suspicious of it, it will allow it to grow. If you don't expose the scumbaggery within yourself, you can't really expose scumbaggery in others.
Lost for words.
Yeah. Well, I think this is kind of like one of the really most powerful lessons in my life, is that you can't really become your enemy. In order to defeat them, there has to be some other way. I don't know what that way is yet. I don't know how good can oppose evil without eventually becoming it. But I will endeavor to find a way.
And I'm with you on that. I just don't think I don't think we've seen any examples of another way. But hey, let's create one.
Well, see, the thing I like about you, Dylan, is that you're still open to possibility. You haven't gotten old and seen the bitter, cynical, jaded kind of bullcrap that most grown-ups go through. You know, and this is something I noticed when I was a kid, is that a lot of the adults that were trying to teach me, you know, like in school and what have you, were dumber than me.
Or more ignorant.
Yeah, I mean, how exactly is somebody who's more ignorant and dumber than me, while I'm a child and they're an adult, going to teach me anything of value? You know how much I learned of value in the entirety of high school and elementary school and university? Something that was actually practical, of benefit, that I actually wound up using in later life?
Probably about the same that I have.
Just nothing. And then people will say, oh, but what about maths? What about English, etc.? And I go, well, I learned basic maths from my parents. I learned how to speak English from my parents. My mother is a poet. My father's an orator and a businessman and an entrepreneur. Okay? My English teacher actually put me down what they call SAT scores. I'm not sure what the equivalent is on the US scale.
It's still SAT.
GPA average or something like that.
Oh, GPA. SAT is a test that we take. Oh,
okay, so you've got the same test. And I was like a pretty bum student, like really. I was not getting very good grades whatsoever. And I was really depressed one time. My English teacher actually, she broke the law and showed me what my SAT results were in order to encourage me. Now, she showed me the vocabulary scores that I got. Now, my vocabulary was in the top three in the school. And the people who were the top two were the what we call the ducks of the school, the DUX, the number one students, as in they got A+ and nothing less kind of students. And I was only slightly below them in vocabulary score. my ability to remember words and actually use them in a sentence and be able to apply and understand radical concepts and be able to compress them in a linguistic fashion so that people who are even unaware of the concept's existence in the first place will indeed have a solid understanding of them after I've finished explaining it. And this was pretty encouraging at the time. And I've had many people like that throughout my life who've come up to me when I've been down in the dumps or persecuted by somebody else and seen what I'm capable of and try and help me, try and encourage me. And those people may have no idea just how much effect they've had on my life. I probably can't even quantify it. But I do know that those small little influences, however many there may have been, did make a difference. So anybody who tells you, and this is usually jaded adults saying this, that you can't change the world, you can't do this, you can't do that, or that's never going to happen, you know, they're basically people who haven't had enough encouragement in their life. They haven't had people that are better at something than them come along and tell them something they don't already know, so that they can actually improve themselves. And that's a very sad, sad state of affairs, because it means that this disease of cancerous lies and deception and hopelessness that has been instilled upon the population doesn't show any signs of giving up its fight. And the end game of this, as has been the end game of every tyrant throughout history, is to dumb everybody down, because it's so much easier. I'm sure gamers will understand this concept. It's so much easier to kill and attack bots who can't think for themselves than it is to go up against other thinking people in a game scenario.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why I don't use bots when I play games.
Yeah. Incidentally, it's why I use bots, but I make sure that they outnumber me like 4-1. You know, I just make sure that it's not a fair fight, at least in some way that I can.
Yeah, I prefer to play on my own, so unless I don't want to get attacked and completely fail, so if I'm online, at least I can put up a fight.
But I think this is sort of a warrior spirit that we all have, you know, this passion, this love for life. And despite that, I'm still being cynical and jaded about a whole bunch of stuff. And I even find myself saying that to other people. Oh, that can't happen. Oh, that won't happen. Oh, that's being unrealistic or whatever. But I also still acknowledge the possibility that not only could I be wrong and the other person be right, but also that they could be wrong about just how effective they could be. You know?
Yeah, I mean, to eliminate the possibility of something ever happening is probably more closed-minded than just being just allowing yourself to be dumbed down. You have to acknowledge the possibility of everything, but also acknowledge when it's a low probability.
How do you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you've under mind control. It's about right, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess I'm under mind control. That's never a question I've asked myself.
Yeah.
Until now.
But don't be afraid, because you're not the only one. See? And just because you're under mind control, doesn't mean you can't have a few laughs about it. You know, there's a possibility, of course, that I'm still under mind control, even though I'm questioning it constantly questioning it. How are my thoughts made? Did I come up with that concept, or did somebody else come up with the concept and I merely repeated it over without thinking about it myself and actually intellectualizing it and testing it in order to see that it's valid before mindlessly repeating it? And ultimately, that actually happens with a lot of the things that I say and I do. And I have to admit that. And I'm one of the few radio show hosts who actually will admit these things that I admit about my weaknesses and my inabilities to handle certain situations and that kind of thing. It's because the personality type that's required for this job is, in particular, the personality type that's required for longevity and success in talk radio is more or less sort of like a watered-down version of hubris, right? Being able to, thinking that you know what's going on and being really self-confident about it.
Well, Vinny, that's why you're one of the most well-known hosts, because you're real. You acknowledge your weaknesses. That I think that's going to be something new that all the major hosts are going to have to start doing, because I think it's becoming a journalistic standard for this sort of thing.
Mm. And in the next 5 minutes before we go to break, I mean, it's kind of like you've got two choices. You've got the authoritarian and the libertarian, right, as we were talking before. And the basis of authoritarianism is you need somebody else to tell you what to do so that you don't turn into a scumbag, all right? Libertarian says you have to tell yourself and force yourself to do the right thing so that you don't turn into a scumbag. And I'm far more on that side of the spectrum than having somebody else tell me what to do. However, if I never had people telling me right from wrong, if I never had the wrong things done to me so that I could actually feel what it's like to have injustice done upon you, I probably wouldn't have developed the necessary empathy to give up my life potential of making millions of dollars selling goodness knows what. Whatever I'd gotten into, I do really good at. And unfortunately, to be really good at telling the truth and helping activists who the mainstream media ignore, there aren't a whole lot of financial rewards inherent in that. There really aren't. I've managed to, over the last 7 years or so, be capable of earning enough through people's voluntary donations so that I don't have to have a slave job and I can literally spend all my time working without worrying exactly how big my paycheck is or where that or where the next paycheck is coming from. This has allowed me to kind of grow and prioritize, because when you've got the time to think and you don't have to pay for your existence and you don't have to leave the house every single day to go and do things that you don't want to do, it allows you to develop who you are and what you want to do at a far more productive and indeed a geometric rate. And
we're down
to at 3 minutes. Yeah. And I think if I don't know where I'm going to end up in this journey, Dylan, is the thing. And what my life experience has taught me is that the more successful I am at doing something good, the more people will hate me for it. And I've basically gotten used to the idea that even though I feel like I'm a good person doing the right thing, I will be chastised, I will be attacked, and I will have a lot of people try to sabotage me, steal my ideas, or undermine me, or talk bad about me behind my back. And I've kind of had to accept that as a possibility, that even though I'm doing the right thing, the wrong thing will continue to be done to me, and the more right things that I do, the worse wrong things will be done to me.
Vinny, where can people find you online?
You can go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. Or you can just search Vinny Eastwood on your NSA-related search engines. They tend to know where I am. And my new YouTube channel is Eastwood Vincent. And I encourage people to listen to the shows, and also go through the back catalogue, because I've done thousands of shows. I haven't even turned 30 yet, and I've done more work than most truthers have done in a lifetime. And this is because I've sacrificed every minute, every hour, and every dollar of my life to make sure people who are smarter than me, who come up with research that I can't do myself, actually get given a platform to be heard on the world stage when the world platforms will not give them a chance.
That's our job here.
If you ain't doing that, then what the hell's the point?
Absolutely. You can find me on Shaken Wake Radio Network, Wednesdays 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time, both days. And you can also find me here, Saturdays 8 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. You can find me on the Liberty Beacon Media Network, Wednesdays 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. And subscribe to my YouTube channel, The Truth Speaks. Vinny, thanks for coming on. It's always fun to have you on.
Well, thank you. All right, well, I've got to jump on another show now because they also need to enjoy the fun.
All right, Vinny. Can we schedule that talk for Monday for me?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's catch up on Facebook, bro. I've got to go.
All right, see ya.
Cheers, bro.